from Northern California. It's the Penpals.buzz Prison Pen Pal Podcast. Hear real stories from real inmates who want to write to you. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
I'm so excited about today's show. This interview we've had scheduled, and I've been looking forward to it every day and every day. And finally, the day has come where we get to talk to this woman from Canada who's the host of my favorite podcast in the entire world. This is the show that I listen to when I'm driving, when I'm in bed, when I'm in the shower too sometimes. And I think she's calling in right now. We're gonna see if we can talk to her on line four. Is this her? Let's see. Hello.
Big Steve, this is a United States Tariff Association.
What?
You have a call from Canada.
Yeah.
Are you willing to pay the tariff?
If
not, we can't connect the call.
You can't. I have to pay a tariff or else you can't. Are you kidding me? Daisy, do you know about this? Pay a tariff. That's just ridiculous.
I don't make the rules.
Oh, my God.
I just enforce them. I'd assume if you spend time in prison, you know all about ridiculous rules,
right? Well, that's
right?
True, yeah.
Are you going to pay the tariff or not?
I don't know.
It's 19 cents.
Oh, 19 cents. Daisy, do we have 19 cents somewhere? Can you go in my car? There's like a little change thing and just grab 19 cents and pay this guy so we can get this done. Thank you.
Tariff payment accepted. We will now connect your call.
This is crazy. She should be here with us now. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing so well. I survived April Fool's, which was great. Now I've got this lean cuisine and this cup of coffee. And man, I'm so excited to finally have the chance to talk to you.
Same. I get to talk to Big Steve. I'm so excited. I'm like your number one fan.
By the way, hey, this is Jay, everybody. Mm-hmm. Jay from, it's the only other podcast, really. I listen to mine and I listen to your podcast, and it's called More Than Same. An Inmate's Girlfriend. You guys just put out this 3-part series on pen pals, and I heard the first part. Mm-hmm. I'm driving to the casino and I'm listening to part one. And before I'm even done with part one, I'm emailing you. I'm like, Jay, we got to get you on the show. Because if people like listening to the Prison Pen Pal podcast, they're also going to love listening to More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend. I mean, you guys cover so much good stuff. You reduce the stigma around, people's perceptions of prison wives, prison girlfriends, people that think, why in the hell would somebody want to write to an inmate? You're really helping educate and inform and change people's perceptions on that. And I also really like how you continue to reinforce the idea that a person's worst mistake in life isn't how they should be judged.
But it is a really big thing, I find. And I don't know how much you probably relate to it as well. Is sometimes it's like, well, you look at something and we're so have these preconceived, life judgments where we're so used to jumping to conclusions based on certain things. And then this whole world that I've been in the past couple of years where all my views are getting distorted now on everything.
Oh,
and then you read and you're like, wait, this sounds horrible. Like, how did this person do it? And then when you take a second to learn what's happening and you're like, wait, okay. Yeah. The media is one thing, the story's another and whatever. So I feel like I'm still in a place where I'm learning.
You're the host and the creator of this incredible podcast. It's called More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend. It's been around, about a year and a half, I believe. You guys have, I couldn't count. You have so many episodes, I couldn't count. What are you up to now, episode-wise?
I think it's like 47 or 48, something around there.
It's focusing on the dynamics of prison relationships and reducing stigma, in large part the stigma placed on people in the free world who either have a relationship with someone in prison or maybe their family or their friends, and trying to show this isn't as unusual, uncommon, as weird and as crazy as people might think. You see all this stuff on TikTok, all this hatred, animosity, and you've done such a good job at just humanizing that aspect of both incarcerated people and those of us who write to them. Tell us about your husband, Nick. Now, you guys met on a pen pal site or something, right?
We did. It was Write a Prisoner. And long story short, I saw him. I was initially looking for someone older that I could gain some knowledge and experience from. And I was not looking for a relationship. I had set some values on the site to older like Pacific Northwest area. I did put life sentence and whatever, and I couldn't find anything. And I was like, maybe this is just a shot in the dark. Maybe this is not such a great idea.
Uh-huh.
And then I clicked on something, and I don't know what I clicked on, but his profile popped up.
Oh, wow.
And I just had this feeling like I needed to message this person.
Okay.
It was such a weird feeling. And a lot of people I find that have pen pal relationships and people that I've communicated with over the years have had similar experiences, I find, where they're like, I need to message this person. I just find like there's some kind of connection there. So I did. And my life has never been the same. We have a running joke about if I could go back to January, would I do it? And never click on his profile.
Right. Right.
And I must admit, sometimes the challenges we've been through, it's been crazy. But all along the way, everything that I've done since wouldn't have happened if I hadn't met him. Like, I've grown so much as a person. He is that person that I was looking for initially in terms of his knowledge and his experiences and the depth of novels and books that he's written and everything that he knows. Like, I've learned so much. I've grown so much as a person. And I'm so, so grateful that this site existed, that I could meet him. Because if not, I never would have. He's been incarcerated for 15 years, right? And the person that he was at 20 is very, very different than the person he is today at 35.
How long ago did you first, what you said January is when you first wrote to him?
Yeah, of 2024.
When you initially were searching for specifically someone with a life sentence, what were you thinking?
I was thinking that if they had a life sentence, they wouldn't come out and try and find me or and hurt me. So that was my idea originally, which is crazy to say right now, but that's the truth, is that if someone was serving life, then I would be safe.
Right. Yeah. No, it makes sense. I used to think kind of similar like that before before I'd experienced it myself. I remember walking by the county jail when I would go to the mall near my house, and sometimes I'd see the inmates out at the rec yard there, and and you could see them, and that was just terrifying because you always think they're about to jump over the fence and murder you, or strangle. And I was just like, until I was like 32 when I finally got arrested, I was thinking, man, these are bad guys. You got to do so. I get that. A lot of the guys on our site, they make the mistake of saying they're going to be getting out soon. Even if they're not, they'll write something like, "Oh, my appeal should be going through, and I'll be out by May." And then they're like, "Steve, why is no one writing me?" And I was like, "Because they're scared of you."
True. And I do see that a lot as well. There is like hope plays a really big part, I think, in a lot of people's lives that are incarcerated. And there's always that. I feel like they live on that hope and turn it into like a reality when it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And so many times for so many people, hope is all there is. That's all you have. So you might as well hold on to it. More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend, we're with Jay, the host and the creator of the show. And Jay, how'd you come up with the name More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend?
So Nick actually had started a few years ago with that name, More Than an Inmate. And it actually came from his mom. They were discussing different ideas on doing some kind of pen pal website or whatever. And their idea was to basically interview these guys and ask them, how are you more than an inmate, and then put them on a pen pal site.
Oh, that's
so great. They were kind of like vetted, right? So it was called More Than Inmate. And then Nick ran with that and has always kept that More Than an Inmate as a nonprofit that he wants to start and to tell people, I am more than an inmate. And then when we were trying to come up with a name, it was like, well, at the time it was a girlfriend. And he's like, well, why don't you talk about being more than an inmate's girlfriend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you are getting stigmatized as dating a quote unquote inmate. Well, you're more than just an inmate's girlfriend. That's what the topic of the whole show is going to be. And I was like, that's awesome. Because then he has more than an inmate, and then I have more than an inmate's girlfriend. And it's kind of turned into this brand, right? Where we're branching out in different ways. So it's been really cool, and I'm really glad that we connected each other.
I love the name, because you can interpret it in so many ways. And now, I mean, I was thinking, okay, she's more than an inmate's girlfriend because she's now his wife. So you can look at it. You can look at it that way, or you can say, I have so much more value than just being defined by being a girlfriend of someone who's in prison. That doesn't have to define everything about who I am. So you can look at it that way, and several other ways I thought of, but I just think that's such a great name. And you can find your podcast. I mean, it's everywhere. It's on Spotify. It's on Amazon Music. It's pretty much anywhere. So you met Nick. You got into a relationship. How fast was it until you decided to officially begin dating?
It actually, a lot of times people get into these relationships really quickly, and Nick and I did not. So I actually didn't even talk to him on the phone until about May. So from January till the end of April, we were solely messaging on GTL. And it was just long messages back and forth. We kind of made like this schedule where I would respond in the afternoon and he would respond in the morning, the following morning. We were reading books together. We were talking about books, philosophy, religion, everything. And we just really connected through like an old school pen pal kind of relationship.
Cool.
Yeah. And then that's how the feelings developed. And then I sent him a video making fun of him for putting grape jelly in rice. Like, ew.
It's just and like sugar, Jay. You can use it just like sugar for anything. Yeah. I used to put mayonnaise in my cheesecake, man. It's just like eggs, I promise.
Gross. So I made fun of him. And when he saw that video, he was like, oh my gosh, like I need to meet you. He asked me to go on a video visit. And I had already gone through the paperwork to be approved, but I had no idea all this time that we could have scheduled video visits. So after that video, he was like, I need to meet you. So then we met on video visit. So we actually met face-to-face before we met on the phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we had just a great visit. It was amazing. I think it was the end of May we started talking on the phone, and then I met him in person in July. And when I met him in person at the end of July, that was like the moment where it was like we knew for sure that this was real and this was long-term.
Man. Have you gone back since then?
I had gone to visit a couple times, and right when we had decided to launch the podcast. So Nick had lost his appeal for his habeas, and that's basically his last chance appeal because his lawyer filed the appeal a minute too late. So we were incredibly disappointed.
Wow.
And around that time is when the podcast developed. AJ at the time was going to do the podcast with me, and then she decided she didn't want to do it. So then I was like, I don't know that I want to do it alone. And Nick was like, I'll do it with you. Like, I'll do the first episode with you.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay. So I did that first episode. And ever since I did that first episode in November of 2024 and released it, nothing has been the same in terms of our relationship or our accessibility. That morning when the podcast went out, he was pulled out of his cell. He was searched. He was held. They did everything to him. And they removed me from the phone line. They removed me from messaging. I have yet to get either of those back.
I don't know if this is real. They'd kept his toothpaste from him for about 5 days.
Yeah, they kept that. And he lost an eye from a fight. So he has, one of his eyes is blind. And he has special medication that he needs to maintain pressure or something with the eye. So it's very painful when he doesn't have that medication. And they withheld it. So, yeah, they just wouldn't. They were essentially upset with me and him with the podcast launching and with me publishing some of his books.
Uh-huh.
In January, Nick went on a radio show, and that was beginning of January. It had nothing to do with me, nothing to do with the phones. And the day after that radio show, they sent a letter, which I didn't receive until February, but they had sent a letter saying that I was banned indefinitely from seeing him or speaking to him. And that was in January of 2025. And then we got married in February, and that's the last time that I saw him in person. And they allowed us 15 minutes. My mom, I had sent an approval form to get my mom approved because she was flying down. I mean, I've never been married before. Nick's never been married before. Mm-hmm. His father was able to attend. I wanted my mother to attend as the second witness. And they literally withheld the visitor form. And it came the next day after our wedding, and that the approval, but I had sent it in on time. I had called my mother's 72 years old, and she was there. She was at the prison, and I was like, she's right here. Can you let my mother in? No, we can't do that. I just called it petty because you knew it was the form was approved. You just didn't want to let my mother witness her only daughter get married.
It's so petty, and it's so indicative of what I've witnessed just in general with the prison system here in the United States, where for so many of the workers at the prison, it's just this big power trip, you know. Very few of them are able to use their rational mind and actually think, okay, maybe this would make sense. That's her mom, and she's 72, and she's probably not going to come in here and stab a rival gang member. You know, they can't yeah. use their logic or any kind of critical thinking. They're just like, no, the warden says, you know, this is the rule, so this is the rule. And that's really sad. And it really goes to show people. I mean, here you are, you had a professional career, you're intelligent, educated, smart, well-spoken, kind, empathetic. I mean, you're the person they're blocking from contacting people in the facility. Exactly. And at the same time, they're letting in other types of people, which, you know, they're bringing drugs in, to, you know, they're doing all these things. But let's pick on Jay.
It's crazy. I was always pro-administration. And me and Nick would fight over it. And he would tell me, like, I've been doing this for years. And I'm like, you know what? If they have to maintain the safety and security in there, like, let them do it. I don't understand what your problem is. And I was like, you know, when he got searched that day on the podcast, I was like, you know what? Do it. Like, if they need to search you to make themselves feel more comfortable, I would love for them to do it. And if they find something, I would love even more to know what they find. Because, like, they have to maintain a certain level of security. And if they don't feel comfortable and they need to search you, then let them do it. And that's how I was. And Nick was like, there's no reason, and yada, yada, yada. And I feel so disappointed and discouraged in the system because I was so pro-administration and trying to be understanding and trying to work with them. And then this just has put such a sour taste in my mouth over the whole experience, because now that this lawsuit has gone through, and like, we can get into that, but they've conceded that we didn't break any rules. So you've already told us that we did not break any rules with the podcast or the books.
Yeah.
And you literally are just doing it just to do it. And that's why when we filed the lawsuit and the state came back and tried to dismiss it, saying, like, you know what, the prison can do what they want if they feel that it's a safety and security. The judge came back and said, I'm not dismissing this case.
On one of your shows, they were trying to, we're ready to settle. And we'll reconsider everything in 2 more years. Or it was some like bogus offer they gave to you, right?
They came back with, you can have your messaging and your phone back in October of 2026. And then we will review your status in February of 2027. And I emailed the lawyer right away and I was like, absolutely not. Am I conceding to any of this? Because none of this I did wrong. I did nothing wrong. So why are you holding me, my messages and my phone till October when I didn't do anything wrong? Mm-hmm. You already conceded that there was no rule violation and you don't even want to speak to me about it. Like, when everything happened, I was like, hey, let's have an open conversation. Let's talk like adults. Let's work through this. Give me a second. You know, like, I am not someone that wants to break any rules. So if I broke one, please tell me. I do not want to be a rule breaker. And I just got silence. And that's what I always get, is silence when I ask for anything.
It's
really frustrating and it's really sad.
It's like poking the bear, like, and they don't realize this is not making it better to do this to you, you know? I mean, I think they just can't admit they're wrong, and they're sort of so far into it now that they just have too much pride to say, yeah, I think we might have screwed this one up, Jay. We're sorry.
Yeah, the lawyers called me one day and they were like, we need to talk. And I was like, okay. And they're like, we need to know, is there anything that you've ever done that we should know about so that we don't show up with our pants around our ankles? Right. And I was like, no, I do not do things that are against the law. I do not promote things that are against the law. Like, I am not that person. I promise you, there is nothing to find. I don't have claws, like skeletons. My husband has lots, but I got none.
Other than getting blocked from communicating with your husband, which is obviously a fairly large complication of the podcast, yet you're still doing the podcast. You didn't quit. You're still going forward with it, which is amazing. It shows some real strength, I think, and fortitude. Mm-hmm. But what else has happened in your life that's been challenging as a result of this experience?
Oh, gosh. I have continued the podcast, and I think that's a saving grace for me because it's given me purpose in a lot of ways, and meeting people has given me a lot of hope and encouragement to keep going. And Nick and I laugh about it because we're like, I think if this wouldn't have happened, I don't know that I would have continued the podcast. You know, I don't know that right. I would have been so passionate about it. But having that mental health piece of not having your husband accessible, but not only not having him, is he's in a special management unit where he's on lockdown 21 hours a day. The limited amount of human contact that he has as is, and I'm his favorite person other than his mother. Like, I'm pretty sure we're pretty close, you know, like he really loves his mom too.
Yeah.
But,
it's hard when you make the guy pick, you make the guy pick which one's your favorite. And it's like, it depends on who's asking.
Luckily him and his mom are like top of my favorite people list too. So
now, did you get a go? Was it his mom? You got to fly back like for the holidays or something. And you met some of his family. Is that right?
Yes. I got to go to, they live in Washington. And that was the first time that we got to actually meet. But I talked to his mother, like I text her every day. We're constantly in communication. And then getting to spend the holidays with them, I was a little bit scared because I've never spent any time with them. I've met his dad and hung out with his dad, but I've never met his mom and his sister and nieces and nephews, brother. Like they were all there. And I was staying at their house. And then by the time I had to leave, I was so sad I had to leave because
so
we had such a good time.
That's just like so cool. You don't hear that very often, like to go meet the family. That's
I'm so
cool.
Blessed. Yeah. But not having access to me, the mental health toll that it takes on him is really hard. You know, I can keep busy. I was still working. I still have the podcast. There's things that I've been doing to keep myself busy, and I've been doing a lot in that time. But to know that your husband is suffering and you can't do anything, it kills me.
Yeah.
And trying to fight a system that is designed against families for no reason, it's crushing. And it really took a toll on my mental health. And like you said, I had a pretty high demand career at the same time. And then that was being very high demand. Yeah. And then I ended up going on stress leave from work because I couldn't handle all the pressures coming at me from all the different sides and the guilt that I was feeling. And then, when I came off disability, I was let go. So I actually lost my job over it.
I think what you said earlier that, and I know this is true for me, that no matter what's going on in your personal life or how crazy or bad things might be going on a given day, I can come in here to my little studio. I don't know if anyone listens, Jay, besides me and you. I know my wife doesn't even listen, which is disappointing. But but you and I listen, and so that's really I'm just doing it more for me. I love to help people. It really helps keep you grounded because it gives you all these things aren't working out quite right in life, but I feel like I have this purpose. And
100%.
One of the things with your show is so cool is that you don't really focus the show on you, yet within the show, you can always kind of tell a little bit of your story. And so when I'm listening, like I'm hearing 90% of the story is your guests and what's going on with them. But each episode, you get to know a little more about Jay and a little more about Nick in the story.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. And in doing so, you're fighting against things like felony murder. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to people who might not know the difference from like felony murder, what Nick's in prison for versus like a first degree murder?
Yeah. And I actually have some really exciting news for that in Nebraska that I just found out this morning.
Oh, great.
So I'm very, very excited. So Nick's incarcerated for felony murder under the felony murder law in Nebraska, which gives an automatic natural life sentence under first degree murder if you are committing a felony and someone is killed during that felony. It automatically falls under felony murder law, which gives you an automatic life sentence. So what that means really is that let's say you are robbing a drug dealer, like in his case, and a group of you are robbing a drug dealer. It doesn't matter if you were the shooter, if you were involved in any altercation, if you were the driver, if you were just standing outside watching guard, taking guard or whatever, you would fall under a first degree murder, which would give you an automatic life sentence. So that's what happened to Nick. So he wasn't involved in any altercation. He didn't even have a weapon on him. This is not up for discussion. Like the state agrees to this.
Yeah.
So it's very important also that we're not trying to fight the state on what happened. We're trying to say, this is what happened. This we're taking what you said, whether it's right or not, as what happened. But even though he wasn't involved in any altercation, didn't have a weapon, didn't shoot anybody, he got a natural life sentence because of it. And what I find really interesting in Nebraska is that at trial, the actual shooter, when he went to trial, the jury could choose first degree murder, second degree murder, or manslaughter because he was the actual shooter. So the jury could choose different options. Whereas at Nick's trial, the jury could only choose first degree murder and a life sentence or innocent. There was no other option. Wow. There was no robbery option. There was nothing else.
Oh, that's
so the jury couldn't say, and the prosecutor doesn't have to prove intent to kill like a first degree murder charge. The prosecutor only has to prove intent to commit a felony. So they had to prove that Nick intended to rob someone.
Mm,
and because a life was lost, it jumps to first degree murder.
So theoretically, like somebody could have just been sitting in a car and their friend mm-hmm. gets out and robs someone and murders him, and the guy in the car could get a life sentence and the shooter could get 15 years or something for manslaughter.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. We're not even saying that he doesn't deserve time. We're not saying he should be free. He was over sentenced because of the way the laws work, right? So that's what we're trying to show people is what felony murder is and how it impacts people. There was a guy who was sentenced in 1985 in Nebraska. He was going to do a burglary. He was 18 or 19 years old, and he wanted to rob someone in the home, right? Like not involving people. It was a burglary. He was going to go in and steal jewelry. There was a woman that was home. He didn't know she was home. She passed away of a heart attack. He got a life sentence. 1985, this man has been incarcerated since 1985.
Is stuff changing now with that?
So a couple months ago, I had connected with some people that the person who founded Felony Murder Elimination Project in the U.S., and she actually helped change the laws in California, which were the first laws, and her son is incarcerated. So I had talked to her, and she had given me some ideas to try and get the senators awareness. She's like, a lot of the time it's about awareness because people don't know, because logically it doesn't make sense. So we know that the logic is there, but you need to tell people that it exists for them to know. And what she had done back in the day was she had made a binder and went to every senator with this binder and showed them the binder of people who were sentenced under that law. I couldn't do that because of where I am and also the way Nebraska legislature works. So what I did instead, since I already published books for incarcerated authors, I published a book solely for the purpose of getting it in the hands of all the senators. So I published a book on felony murder law in Nebraska.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it talks about the laws. And I took all the cases, I did a bunch of research and found about a dozen people that were currently incarcerated under the felony murder law, had nothing to do with the crime of murder, and were sentenced to life sentences. So I put their pictures, I put their stories in that book, I put sample legislation in that book, and I sent it individually to each senator with their name on it. And that was a couple months ago. And then I didn't hear anything. And I was like, you know, whatever, let's try again next year because it's a short session this year.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, today I found out that last week, one of the senators put forth an interim study on the felony murder law for the Judiciary Committee to do to find out if it's constitutional and if we are over sentencing people.
Oh, wow.
And what the impacts are. So it's in the Judiciary Committee's hands right now to do a study on it. And I'm so excited because all of the senators know now because I sent them books on it.
That's so amazing. Do you happen to know the senator's name so we can give him a thank you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He is a godsend. There are a few people in Nebraska that are just doing God's work, and he is one of them. His name's Terrell McKinney. If you watch the legislature, he's hilarious. Like, he has no F's given. Like, he will tell you like it is.
Yeah.
And he is such a supporter of prison reform because he gets it. Like, he understands. He's just someone very, very special that a lot of us look up to. And he's the one that put it forth, and I had no idea until today.
So. Oh, that's so incredible.
Very exciting.
Congratulations, man. It's great when, like, hard work pays
Thank
off.
You.
Because, you know, we're always used to defeats. Like, we lose at every corner, it seems. So when something actually wins, it's like, wow, I want to, like, whip up some What's the food there in Canada? What do you eat there? I don't know. I can't make you a cheeseburger, but I want to celebrate with you. I want to have a party. This
a
is poutine, so good.
A poutine.
Now, you
know, what a poutine is?
No, what's a poutine?
It's fries with gravy and like curd cheese on top. Oh, it's so good. Oh, and it melts and it's amazing. Oh. It's a huge deal. If you ever go to Montreal, they're big there.
Oh, that sounds so good right now. I'm so hungry right now, Jay.
Me too.
No, that's the great. That's such a great story. You know, the thing is, like these senators, legislators, whatever, they're going to see. Sometimes they might even hear you bring it to their attention, and most people wouldn't even believe it. You know, most people, they're going to read that and think, nah, that can't be how it is. I bet she's exaggerating or she's making stuff. So they won't even believe it. And then that one guy might actually look into it and he's like, holy crap. Like she's actually telling the truth. And it's like eye opening to him. So that's so cool. You mentioned the book that you sent out, and you actually help incarcerated people publish books.
Yes, I have a few projects, and that's one of them. It started with Nick's because Nick wanted to publish his book, and we went and looked at the cost of publishing for incarcerated authors that other people were already doing it and saw how expensive it was. And that's just not fair. It's not that hard. And we decided to start our own publishing company so that authors can publish at a reasonable price.
Right, yeah.
And get their book out in the world. When I'm able to send a book that someone wrote and it now has a cover and I can send it through Amazon to them, the joy that they feel and the appreciation, it's like no other.
Oh, I bet.
And it really helps. Oh yeah. Like it's just the rehabilitation, the positivity, like they're surrounded by such negativity, and for them to write a book and then be able to publish it and see it in print so that other people can see it and, you know, read it, and they are able to positively contribute to the community.
That's so motivating. It's
next level.
Where can people find that?
It's bestselfpublications.com, and you can email me directly at info@bestselfpublications.com.
All right. If you just tuned in like you were in the bathroom or something, we're talking to Jay, the creator and the host of a podcast called More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend. And Jay, you just recently released a 3-part series on pen pals. Want to hear more about that?
We did a 3-part series. The first part was the female perspective. So it was a very lighthearted, a lot of our episodes sometimes tend to be heavy and deep. And this one was just a very light, like, why did you do this? How did you do it? Who did you meet? What do you hope for them? Would you do it again? Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get that, you know, anybody could really email or write someone who's incarcerated and how it changed her life doing it. The next week is a male perspective who's incarcerated. And I loved his perspective because he taught me a lot in that episode. I highly, highly encourage people to listen to it. His name's De Niro the Great, or his author name is De Niro the Great. And he wrote a book on pen pals, but he also speaks from a very honest perspective of the power that a pen pal relationship has, and not only in the positive way that we assume, but also the negative way, and how to make sure that you're writing someone who has the right incentives and the right reasons and is rehabilitating themselves while they're incarcerated, but also how to people that are incarcerated to be careful of people on the outside, because there's a lot of people that are there to control you and, you know, with money and with time, and how detrimental that could be to someone who's already incarcerated to be treated like that. So awesome episode. Love it. And the third kind of ties it into the finale with Erica, who runs a pen pal page. So she runs a TikTok with 15,000 followers. And she, as a woman who's dealing with this, is dealing with direct contact between both, you know, the pen pal and the people that are looking for pen pals. So we talk about her perspectives and what she's learned from both sides.
You have so many amazing guests on the show. Do you ever get nervous? Like, you're interviewing people from Love After Lockup and Prison Wives. And I'm like, I'd be freaked out. Like, because I know you said you don't watch it much, but I watch Love After, or I used to watch it religiously. Sean and Destiny's right here in Red Bluff, right near us. And I'd watch that every week, and I'd be if Destiny were to call the podcast, I'd be just terrified. I'd feel like I'm talking to Angelina Jolie or something.
There was one girl who I loved. She was on a show. I'm not going to name her because I didn't interview her, but she was on a show, and I was so nervous. Like, I was such a huge fan of her on the show, and she said she'd come on the podcast. We had an initial call. We spoke to her about everything. She was like so down, and then I was a nervous wreck. Like, you know, when you start something and you're like, okay, like to have this person on the podcast would be a dream, right? Like you have your ultimate goals.
Yeah.
She was one of them that me and Nick would talk about. So I was like freaking out, and she didn't even pick up her phone for that call. I find out later how, let's just say, imperfect this person actually was.
Okay.
And since that moment, I was like, wait a minute, they're just people.
Yeah.
I think that one girl kind of burst my bubble of fear in interviewing.
How can people find you, your socials and all that, if they want to get in touch?
Like you said, the podcast is called More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend, and you can find all the information I have on my website, morethananinmatesgirlfriend.com. So that'll give you the podcast information, and you can find my social media on there as well. But if you want to go straight to TikTok, it's at More Than an Inmates GF, or you can go on Instagram at podcast_prisonGF, and you will find me. You can also email me if you want to be a guest or have a story to tell. It's JAE at morethananinmatesgirlfriend.com.
There was a point, I mean, because I was looking at your TikToks, I didn't know what you looked like, man. I had a picture in my mind. And then all of a sudden one day, boom, there you were on the camera. Like, was there a conscious decision at some point to say, okay, I'm not hiding anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to come full force and come out and show myself.
Yeah. When I was working, I had like 120 employees, and my owner was pretty conservative. My boss, my VP, was pretty conservative. And there was a big fear around that. And it's not fair, right? Like, I didn't want to hide my husband, but, and I think that was part of, I'm just such an open person, and I'm so honest that I think that really affected me mentally as well. So when I wasn't working anymore, and I was like, you know what? I'm done hiding.
So brave to just say I'm done hiding. I'm still kind of hiding a little bit, you know,
are you?
I mean, it takes a lot
of,
it takes,
you are, though.
I know you do, but it takes a lot of strength to just come out it's hard because you want to tell your story, but the problem is, like, social media, it's a big problem for me. And I mean, because you get so much hatred on, I don't know, I'm hoping you get more good comments than bad, but we get so many bad comments every day, and it eats on you, you know?
You know what? It was, so a couple months ago, I posted in Reddit, we were trying to figure out on felony murder stuff in Nebraska, and we posted a thread on Reddit about felony murder in Nebraska in the Nebraska group on Reddit. And I can't even tell you what the comments are in there because they were so bad that I had to stop reading it. And Nick was like, you have to read it because we have to know what people think. And I'm like, no, like, I can't. Like, it hurt my soul so much that I couldn't read it. And then I posted a video, I don't know how long ago, and it got like 150,000 views. And the video was talking about Nick's case specifically. The amount of hatred that I got on that video. And that moment, I realized that these are strangers. Like, these are not people that know me personally. They don't know Nick personally. And all it means is that I have opportunities here to change people's minds.
Right. Yeah.
So let them post negatively. And the ones that post positively, like, those are people that, you know, I care about. And the ones that don't, maybe the next time I'll get them. And I've just completely turned my perspective around. And now when I get negative comments, it doesn't even faze me.
I think the way to turn people's perspectives around too, because I've learned it doesn't ever work by just telling them straight up, no, you need to think of it this way, and no, you're wrong. But when they can actually hear gradually, and they're hearing your episodes and they're hearing more and more of these stories, they have to make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. But eventually you want them to decide, kind of like a therapist. The therapist doesn't want to tell you how to think, but he wants you to figure out how you think. And so it's sort of, with a lot of these people, it takes so much work, and they don't care if you've been convicted. They don't care if there's evidence. As soon as there's some charge of anything, they're ready to hang you and cut off your testicles and whatever it might be. You know, I didn't know anything about TikTok, man. We started posting on TikTok, and I'm like, man, we got no comments. What's going on? And I looked one day and it's like, oh, you have 193 comments that have all been filtered in our anti-bullying filtering system or whatever. Click here to read them. And I'm thinking, like, no one's commented, but they were all like so nasty that TikTok like didn't want me to get bullied. And so they put them in a special folder. And then I opened that and I'm like, oh my God. Like, yeah, it was lots of hatred, man.
Oh my gosh. that is hilarious. I love it.
I was like, the bad news is everyone wants to kill me, but the good news is that we have a lot of people noticing our videos. So like you said, that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity for growth. You know, that's potential.
I love it. That's funny.
Right? Hey, before we go, I know we're getting short on time, but I want to talk about the gift catalog. I know you put a lot of work into that.
We started, Nick had always wanted to be a vendor in prisons. I was like, you know what? We should start a gift catalog where people that are incarcerated can order gifts for their loved ones and they can use like their trust funds to do it. So they don't need outside help. Yeah. And they can buy stuff on their own and create that independence, you know, and that, like, I'm sure you understand about when you're inside and rely on everybody else for everything. So this way they wouldn't rely on anybody. So I worked incredibly hard on this. Like, I love it. It's such so much more than a passion project. And there's so many different things in the catalog, from like flowers to teddy bears to clothes to candles to all kinds of stuff, gifts that they can purchase through me using their trust funds. Obviously, we allow different methods of payment, uh-huh, like Venmo and Cash App and whatever. But ideally, we want to promote sending checks through so that they can do the whole process by themselves. And you can just order a free catalog by going on the website, More Than a Mate's Girlfriend. Just, I need their address. And then we send them a free catalog that they can look through. And we've gotten a lot of positive support from it.
It's been so fun, man. I'm so happy we could talk.
Mm-hmm, me too.
All the way from Canada. You're our first international guest. So that's special too.
Yeah. Wow. I feel so special. I cannot tell you how happy I was to receive your email. And I had literally just finished talking to Nick about how I needed to reach out to you.
Oh man.
Because
serendipity.
I agree with you that we're so similar that we need to team up and help each other.
Yeah, you know, as the cool kids say, 100%. I couldn't agree with you more. Jay from More Than an Inmate's Girlfriend. You can get all the details about what she's got to offer and about the podcast at morethananinmatesgirlfriend.com. You can also reach out to her via email at jae@morethananinmatesgirlfriend.com or find her on TikTok. But please don't bully her, because your messages, you know, they'll go into the bullying file, and that wouldn't be good.
I love it. That's funny.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve, but he'll be back soon with another edition of the penpals.buzz prison pen pal podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.buzz is a division of SnapTura Inmate Services.